From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Michael Lev with the Arizona Daily Star. I'm here with Zach Rosenblatt, my colleague, also with the Arizona Daily Star. This is a new podcast that we are finally launching after much discussion.
Years and years.
Tried some different apps, some different concepts, some different ideas. We think we finally have it right. We thank you for joining us. We are going to talk about Arizona football today. Other podcasts in the future, I think, are going to talk about Arizona basketball, maybe some Arizona baseball, some Arizona softball. It'll be all things Wildcats all the time. Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to finally be doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
It's been a long buildup.
Yeah, so as we come to you now, we are, you know, we've wrapped up training camp. We are a little over a week away from the regular season starting against NAU. It seems like it's been forever since they last played a football game. We got to see them scrimmage the other day, which is cool. As you probably know out there, Arizona does not have open practices in training camp for some reason. Topic we can talk about another time. But we got to see them scrimmage. And so let's talk a little bit, Zach, about some of our impressions from that. I mean, one of the things that jumped out to me is that they used a ton of defensive players. And this is even with some of like the veteran type guys like Parker Zellers and Luca Bruno, Saturday, they still used like 20 plus guys.
Yeah.
So I think that this whole idea that they're gonna platoon on defense, that they're gonna rotate on defense, I think it's real.
Yeah. You know, we kind of joked earlier that every year there's like some myths that Rich Rodriguez talks about that never come to pass. Him rotating on defense has been one of them. I mean, it's one of the things, you know, we'll believe it when it happens week one. But, you know, with the way he's talked about using all these newcomers, you'd think at least in week one where freshmen maybe aren't ready to start right away, I think he's going to rotate on that defense.
Yeah, I think it's something that is essential.
You need to.
Today. Yeah. I mean, especially
with that fast-paced offense they run, you know, if they're going three and out, the defense needs to be fresh because they're going to be playing a lot.
So. With their own fast-paced offense and the fast-paced offenses that they will see, I mean, you are liable to play 100 plays in a game. That can happen. I mean, in the old days, that would be two games.
Yeah.
You know, so it makes sense to try to have two units. The other thing is they don't really have a lot of stars on defense. You know, those guys where you're like, this guy can't come off the field.
There's no Scooby Wright.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no Scooby Wright. I mean, maybe Demetrius Flanagan Fowles blows up in that way.
If there's anybody that has a potential, I think it's him.
And maybe.
Yeah, but who knows? Yeah.
But I think they're going to platoon at his spot, too.
Yeah.
So.
Which could be good for him.
Yeah. We did not get to see Khalil Tate play the other day. He had a minor thumb injury. Brandon Dawkins pretty much ran the show. And they sprinkled in the freshman quarterbacks. Did anything jump out to you about the quarterback play from Saturday?
I mean, beyond Khalil, even though Khalil didn't practice, I think pretty much cements that Brandon Dawkins is probably going to be starting week one. Who knows if he'll split up the touches because in theory it should be a blowout. Behind them, you know, Rich talks about how he wants three quarterbacks ready to play. I'm personally not convinced any of those three freshmen are ready to play college football. But, you know, as we saw last year, you know, Khalil had to play before he was ready. If two guys get injured, which is very possible with Khalil and Brandon's running style, I kind of question who is the number three guy. Rhett Rod, Rich's son, you know, he clearly knows the offense and, you know, you could tell he knew what he was doing out there, but he's small. And when the pass rush got heavy, he wasn't really able to do much because he's not big, physical, athletic. You know, Kari Lane has a cannon, but, you know, he's a raw prospect. And then Donovan Tate, for him, it's just time. He just needs time, I think. So I don't know if they'll be very excited if any of those three guys have to play this year, to be honest. Ideally, they all three redshirt, and you never have to worry about that. But I'm sure he'll dress a third one. I'm not really sure who's leading in that battle right now because we don't get to see practice. And I don't think we saw a clear, you know, a guy that's clearly ahead of the other two yet, right?
Yeah. Let's backtrack for a second to Brandon Dawkins. A lot was made of how he threw two interceptions. in that scrimmage. And one of them definitely was kind of a late throw. It was a situation where, you know, the receiver might have been open. He saw it a second too late. He threw late. One of the youngs, Troy or Scotty, can't remember which one.
It's going to be fun sorting through that.
To sort those, to figure out who's who between those two. But one of them got their hand on the ball, tipped the ball to Jarius Wallace for the interception. The other one was just a 50-50 ball. It was a throw that I think it was a smart throw. It was a good throw. You give your receiver a chance to make a play, and Antonio Parks, the cornerback, just happened to make a great play. As Brandon told me the other day, you know, those guys on defense get scholarships too. You know, sometimes they make great plays. But regardless of all that, Brandon's the number one. I think there's no doubt about it. I think there's
his
no doubt.
To lose.
His job to lose. And I think there's no doubt that Khalil is the number two. As you said, that the mystery maybe from this point is who's number three. I tried to ask Rich about it the other day. I don't think he really understood what I was trying to ask him. Or
I mean, as we saw last year, it matters. Like, it matters who their number
it
three
does,
is.
It does. But, Mike, what I was trying to get out of him was, what are the factors that play into that decision? Do you want the most talented guy? Do you want the guy who could come in and maybe just kind of, you know, get you through a game? Do you want the guy
manager,
who knows the system the best to... He just said, it's all about just who can get me into the end zone. You know, just basically like 1, 2, and 3, considering all the factors, no other considerations. But you do have one of these guys who's 26 years old. Is that a factor? Is like the fact
mature,
that the guy's going to be like, you know, if he redshirts and stays here for 5 years, he'll be like 31.
He's older than me right now.
Does the fact that Rhett knows the system better, does that give him a leg up? Is that maybe the guy you want in that emergency third quarterback situation who at least would kind of know what he's doing, even if he's a little bit physically overwhelmed?
Yeah, I think ideally they don't know who their number three quarterback is until a month into the season. Like, they don't have to worry about it. So those other three guys, you know, I'm sure at some point one of them will get like kind of cut out of the rotation and it'll be down to two of them so that one person can be a scout team guy. But yeah, ideally they find out a month into the season who the third best quarterback is, because you know, Kari Lane and Donovan Tate in particular, I think they need time in a college system and playing college football. And Rhett is just smaller, like we talked about. So I just think it's going to be a matter of who acclimates quicker.
I think among those three that Kari Lane is the least likely candidate. I think he is for sure going to redshirt. From what I've seen and what I've heard, as you mentioned, he's raw. He needs a lot of work
he's
with his
shape.
Footwork.
Yeah.
I mean, he played at a really small school in Georgia, which is a large part of the reason that no one really knew about him until that, you know, basically until that Bleacher Report story came out about him. I think Rhett could get by. And Donovan Tate, I mean, he didn't play football for literally 8-plus years.
Honestly,
you cannot expect him to just walk off the baseball diamond onto the football field and be great. I mean, this is not like a John Elway or Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders situation where they're doing both things at the same time and you can make that transition.
I mean, all that, I kind of feel like Rhett Rodriguez might be the best option just in terms of they're probably going to hand the ball off every play if they lose both their quarterbacks. And who can get the ball to J.J. Taylor, Nick Wilson, Nathan Tilford? So if you're asking me right now, this minute, who's the number three, probably Rhett Rodriguez.
I would agree with that. I'm on board with that. And obviously, as you said, they don't want that to happen.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
that's worst case scenario. What they got last
year.
They got worst case scenario last year. So.
Yeah, that'll be a sign that the other quarterbacks are really bad or really injured. With either one of those things is not something that they would want. And anyway, so also that same day, that same Saturday, we got to have our media day with Arizona, which is, for those who don't know, it's kind of cool. They bring us up to the Sands Club, and you can request up to 10 guys, and you get about 10 minutes with
one
each guy at a table.
All the newcomers.
One-on-one, all the freshmen that
we
hadn't
talked
to before.
It's our first exposure to the freshmen, besides the early enrollees.
Yeah, so that's a really cool thing, and we both came away with some pretty strong impressions of some of these new guys. I'll start with you, Zach. Who was the MVP of your round of interviews?
Gary Brightwell, bar none. For those who aren't familiar with him, he kind of appeared in their recruiting class like at the very end. This kid from Delaware, he's from Chester, Pennsylvania, played 3 years in Delaware and 1 year in Baltimore. He appeared kind of out of the blue because, you know, usually these recruits are always tweeting out where they committed to and where they visited, and he just like was not very public about it. He was committed to the Temple, and then on signing day he announced he was coming to Arizona. He still nobody really knew much about him. Then he got here, and you know the coaches bring him up kind of without us bringing him up a lot of times, and he's talented enough that he went to the coaches and said, you know, he saw there was playing opportunity in the slot, and he told them, I want to play the slot. And so he went in the slot, and he might even be better as a slot receiver than a running back now. So, and just in terms of his personality, like he's just got great perspective for a kid who's only 19 years old. He's been through a lot in his life. He, you know, he grew up his whole life without his dad. His sister died in December, and he's just got this very. And he's just so focused on his goal, which is getting to the NFL. And if he's going to get there, he knows he has to start in college first. And he's one of the more interesting freshmen I've ever covered at Arizona.
Yeah, you were raving about him.
I have
him.
A big story coming up
after
about
talking.
Him this week, yeah.
Yeah, maybe by the time this podcast appears, hopefully, that story will be out there. Everybody can look for it. Yes, on Tucson.com. I think it's going to be really interesting. You talked to his mom as well, and she had a lot of interesting things to say about him. So I look forward to reading all about that.
What
Zach.
About you? I already know who your answer is. But
yeah, well,
tell
I think there were two guys that stood out the most. One was Donovan Tate, and one was Derek Bowles. I mean, Donovan Tate. I mean, he's got a fascinating story, and he is very willing to talk about everything that has happened to him. I got the impression that he is he's willing to take responsibility for everything that's happened. You know, he's very accountable. He knows that he messed up his baseball career in a lot of ways. I mean, he had well-publicized and documented substance abuse problems. You know, years later, he's a dad. He's got three kids. These kids are super young, too. I think he said 3 years old, 20 months, and 2 months. Jeez. You can only imagine what
that household is. He's a month older than me, and I've been working at the Daily Star for 4.5
years.
He's
way more mature than you, though. So
that's a tall order, so he must be super mature.
Well, he's been through a lot, obviously. So he was super impressive. You can see, you know, if he ever figures it out, how he'd be a good quarterback. You know, like he's got charisma. You know,
he was the number like three guy in the country coming out of high school. He was going to go to UNC, right?
Yeah.
And he decided to, I mean, smartly decided to make millions of dollars immediately. So.
Yeah, I would play baseball 10 times out of 10 too. But like I said, though, you can see like if this guy became the quarterback at some point, he's got that kind of personality.
Got the moxie.
He does. The other guy, Derek Bowles, the transfer from Coffeyville Junior College via Boise State or Boise State via Coffeyville Junior College.
And he was
College.
Supposedly going to South Florida at some point.
Supposedly going to South
Arizona,
Florida.
But
he said,
denied that to you, right?
He said that was fake news. Not true. Not his words.
Wrong.
He said not true.
Wrong.
Sad. But he also, I mean, you know, everyone, if you Google him, the first thing that comes up is this trial that he was in. Because he got in a fight with a teammate and he bit off.
Mike Tyson'd him, is what
yes,
they say.
Yes, he bit off a portion of his teammate's ear in the course of this fight. He eventually was found not guilty.
But he was kicked off the team, wasn't he?
Yeah. His lawyer, their case, or their, you know, what they tried to prove was that he acted in self-defense. Who knows what happened in this fight?
Yeah.
Both guys were drinking. It was a house party, whatever. Got kicked off the team. Had to go to, you know, he was out of football for a while, had to play at a junior college. Now he's getting a second chance, and he really wants to take advantage of this second chance. He doesn't want to take anything for granted. He knows where he's been before, and he does not want to be there again.
Sure. By the sounds of it, he's been one of maybe their best defensive linemen in camp so far, right?
He might be. He's definitely going to be in the top four.
For sure, yeah.
I think there's no question about that. He's the type of guy that they needed. Around 290 pounds, aggressive, strong, all those sorts of things. We know that defensive line has been a problem for this team. Getting that guy in here who can play this year, I think, is really valuable. You know, they didn't end up landing Noah Jefferson for reasons related to his background check and some stuff that went on. He wouldn't have been able to play this year anyway, though.
When they were trying to get that Jeremiah Talenti kid who wound up playing for Lane Kiffin.
Right.
He would
that's
have been
right.
a nice addition.
I feel like Lane Kiffin should have a Netflix show about his school,
right.
Don't
last
you
chance,
think?
Second Chance You.
Second Chance You.
Boom,
there you go. Wow, it's the sequel to Last Chance You.
Lane Kiffin, the most interesting coach in America.
All right, we're going to wrap up this and every episode of the Wildcast, hopefully, with our hot takes.
It's a dry heat, though.
But it's a dry heat, whatever that means. We're going to come up with a really good name for this at some point. that ties in hot takes and living in the desert and the dry heat and all that stuff. But I'll start, and mine is going to be a prediction for the season. I'm going to say that the Wildcats go 6-6. It's going to take a few upsets along the way. It's going to take going 3-0 in the preseason. We've talked about this before. That Houston game in week 2 is essential to give them a little bit of margin for error. But I can see them conceivably starting 3-0, maybe upset Utah in that first Pac-12 game.
I was
going
to say, who do you think are the teams
upset? Okay, Utah is one. UCLA maybe is a vulnerable team coming here. They've never really been super competitive.
So what's win 6? ASU?
Oregon State.
Oregon State.
Here. You know? Maybe, you know, if that doesn't work out, maybe they can pull off another win at ASU. I mean, I feel like just looking at the schedule that there are 3 wins among those 9. Is that much to ask? For them to go 3-6?
I don't know if it's that much. The Pac-12's tough, man. I think Oregon State's going to be better. UCLA... they're always more talented there in Arizona. It's just a matter of what UCLA team you're seeing. And Utah, I mean, they're the team that Arizona tends to beat in the Pac-12. But Utah's big. They got some big dudes on that team.
We were talking to Yogi Roth yesterday.
He likes them a lot.
Zach, and he also likes Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado.
A lot, so, which is another team where you, like, look at it, you're like, oh, they can beat Colorado. Yeah. Remember, Colorado won this, you know, they won the South last year. Yeah. They were a legit team.
I lean...
Go ahead. Give us your.
I've said 4-8.
Okay.
And the reason why, you know, there's just so many, like, they need this to happen and they need this to happen and this has to happen. You know, they need Brandon Dawkins to become a college football quality quarterback if they're going to upset some teams. They need J.J. Taylor and Nick Wilson to stay healthy this season. They need the offensive line to stay healthy. They have no depth on the offensive line. And on defense, they're going to be playing. 50% of the defense is probably going to be newcomers, freshmen, and guys who were redshirted last year. That's a lot to ask of these kids. You know, they might come out and kill NAU, and it's still until we see them play against Houston, it's hard for me to determine that they're going to be that much improved because you're relying on true freshmen. Like, that's just the reality of it. And you know, obviously they had a lot of bad luck last year with injuries, but, you know, I just think the Pac-12 is so difficult. It wouldn't shock me if they got 6 wins. I'm not saying they can't. I'm just saying right now, you know, all we've seen is them practicing against each other, and it's hard to really determine that much from that. So, yeah, I'm going to 4, and which would mean they might have a new coach by the end of the year or next season.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the whole 6-6 thing is...
Is that enough either? Yeah.
Well, that's a whole other issue. But the Pac-12, as you say, it's a good conference. Like, Washington State is a really good team.
I think it's better top to bottom this year than last year.
I think you might be right. Oregon State is an up-and-coming team. As we mentioned, Colorado and Utah are very solid.
And consider the home and road games.
ASU should be better than they were last year, theoretically, right? And then there's still also
USC. What if that game is for the job of one or the other? That would be interesting.
All the marbles, right?
They both have 5 wins going in? Like, come on.
The one thing I'll say about your prediction from them going from 3-9 to 4-8 is that just about everything that could go wrong did go wrong last year.
That's a good point.
Zach Hemela dying at the start of the season, all the injuries that happened at quarterback and running back, you know, 2 essential positions to just running
and
that
offense. Guys that weren't ready have experience now.
Also, they were so bad on special teams. And with turnovers, I mean, like, 2 critical statistics. They had a negative, I think it was 5.5-yard field position differential. They never got any takeaways. I mean, if you just improve a little bit in these areas, I feel like you can sneak out a couple more victories.
It's possible. Like I said, until I see them against a college football team, it's just so hard for me to figure out what this team's going to be. I don't think anybody knows. Rich even says he doesn't know.
Obviously. Does NAU count as a college football team?
I'll say this. If they go to NAU and they don't handily beat them, then I'm going to be concerned, honestly. It is the first game, but, yeah, I mean, you need to go there and take care of business, play some young guys, get them experience, play a tough game against Houston. I don't know that much about Houston. They have Kyle Allen at quarterback, and they have that defensive line.
Ed Oliver, yeah.
I don't know how they're good outside of that. They might not be that great, but those are 2 guys that are as talented as anybody in Arizona's roster, certainly. So, that game's the one where we've been talking about since last season. Like, if they don't win that one, they're in a lot of trouble. So,
agreed. All right. Well, hey, thanks everybody for listening to the first episode of The Wildcast. Again, I'm Michael Lev with the Arizona Daily Star. This is my colleague Zach Rosenblatt. We'll be on here a lot throughout the fall. You can follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Lev. And what about you, Zach? What's
Zach,
yours?
Zach Blatt. That's Zach with a K, not with an H.
Zach Blatt.
Z-A-C-K-B-L-A-T-T.
Yeah, he gets very offended if you spell his name with an H.
It's a problem. Zach Clark, if you're listening, your name is wrong.
All right. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next time.